Hello, everybody. We're trying something new. How's it going? Just say hi. Everybody say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. So there's a lot of us here. So this is usually a monthly show we do privately, I guess, for our Patreons. But this week we could use a little lift to our weekly show, or our I guess bi-weekly show now, because we're doing it with Criterion now is going to be with Dave Eves, and we're going to talk horror, and we don't have time for all this Criterion nonsense. So we'll talk plenty about Criterions. So we're going to put this on the features feed for the 25th frame, and we have a few regulars, so I'll just go around the room and introduce each other, everybody. So let's see, alphabetically, we have Brad McDermott. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
And we have Josh Hornbeck, man of the hour.
Thank you. Hello. Good day, all.
Is a good day, and I'll just say, great start to the show, man. A lot of positive comments. So,
Yeah,
Criterion
feels good.
channel surfing. Then we have Matt Gasteyer. Hello, who was on that show?
Hello. Yes, I haven't even gotten to my part yet, so I don't know how Josh, chopped and cut me up.
You're as far as I can tell, you're still living, but you're talking about How Do I Criterion. And then Michael Hutchins, who's also on that show. Hello, Michael.
Hi, everybody. I'm just basking in the glow of Josh.
There you go.
Thank you.
There you go. We're all just enchanted by him. And then finally, last but not least, who hasn't a gentleman that hasn't been on any show lately that I'm aware of, William Remmers. Have you been on a show, William?
No, the phone's just not ringing. But I gotta say, I love Josh's first episode so much. I mean, I probably watched like 17 expiring titles last month, and I felt like I had an addiction that no one was helping me cope with. And now Josh is there to fill the void. So thank you, and thanks to Michael and Matt and John for filling in on his show.
Absolutely. And Ed, yeah, can't not shout out Jonathan James or Jonathan Lobinger for his passion. It's really, really great. So we're here to talk about the January 2019 announcements. These are just kind of reaction episodes. I think we can dig in a little more if you're interested. So I have a feeling we're going to have some opinions on this show, or with this bunch. So we'll just start right away, dig right into it. So the first one is Holiday, George Cukor's Cukor or Cukor, excuse me. Although he might have been a Coker for all I know. I'm thinking about the Coker trilogy. So George Cukor's
I think it's
1938.
Nancy Myers, actually, isn't
Yeah, well, that might be the that might have made sense actually. So it's Hepburn and Grant, 1938 Hollywood classic, depending on where you're standing. I haven't seen it, so I'm Switzerland here, but I'm just going to go around the room. What do you guys think, Brad McDermott?
I have not seen this one. I'm kind of one of the few people that didn't like the Philadelphia story, so but Matt told me that I should be really excited about Holiday, so in Matt I trust.
Matt, we trust. Yeah, that's what I hear too. And so the Philadelphia, have you seen it lately? The Philadelphia story, the Criterion edition, or just a long time ago?
No, it was pretty lately. It was only like a year ago. I think I caught it on TCM.
Okay, fair enough. We all have different tastes.
Yeah.
And Josh, have you seen Holiday? I think we just talked about
I haven't.
Holiday.
Yeah, we did just talk about Holiday. I haven't seen it. I'm eager to check this one out. I think George Cukor for me has been a little hit and miss. I've really liked some of his films and haven't liked others. I do like the Philadelphia story, but I'm really curious to hear this, especially since it is coming with such a strong recommendation from Matt. So that I think is going to be really fun.
Yes, and I also do not hate Philadelphia Story, but Matt, do you? What are your thoughts of on either this or Holiday?
Actually haven't seen this movie. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's another Matt, I
No,
guess.
I do not care for the Philadelphia story. I think both of these movies are improved by going in not expecting Bringing Up Baby, because they are
Yes.
very much not Bringing Up Baby. I rewatched this a couple months ago, and I think it's just sort of top tier Hollywood romantic dramas from the 1930s. It's beautiful performances from the two leads, plus my boy Edward Everett Horton, who I just learned today was also in the previous version of this movie, which is included on this disc.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. With
Mary Astor, who is one of my favorites. So I'm excited to see that version of this movie. But I think this is just a very classy production. It's sort of, I group it in kind of with Dodsworth. It's not as it's not a tearjerker, but it's kind of got a similar level of just sophistication to it I find it to be sort of a very moving and interesting exploration of the things that it's talking about. So I'm most happy. I've seen all of the movies from this month, and I'm most excited about this being in the collection.
I have not, and I have a feeling, has anybody else seen all the movies from this month besides Matt? Speak up. Yeah, I didn't think so. and by the way, I'm not sure where the bringing up baby comparison came. Is that just because it's 1938?
Well, it's Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, right.
It's just like the most well-known of their collaborations. And I think I've seen a couple places today online, people complaining that this announcement was not for Bringing Up Baby, which I fully understand. It's never been released on Blu-ray, and I'd love to see that, but I think they're equally impressive movies and completely different, as far apart as you can get while still being a romance movie with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah, kind of not mutually exclusive. So,
so this isn't screwball comedy?
No.
Not at all, yeah. I mean,
and neither is Philadelphia Story.
Characterize this as a comedy. There's certainly comedic moments in it, but I think the heart of the film is definitely dramatic.
And that was my biggest mistake when I went into a lot of the Cukor films that were on the channel. I kind of expected more of the screwball, and it took me a while to fall into his rhythm, because his stuff is very funny, but it's also got a lot of heart as well.
Yeah, and I think that Cukor was sort of his niche in Hollywood. I say niche, it was very much a mainstream, movement, was really women's films. And he literally had the women's films. So I think that he toned down his edge for the film, for his filmmaking. Who's Michael is next, right?
Yep, yeah. I saw the movie, but it's been at least 20 years ago, probably on TCN when I had cable. But I recall very little of it right now. But I do, I'm looking at my Letterboxd rating. I gave it 4 stars, so I must have really liked it, because 4 stars for me is a film I almost love, you know. So, I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, and finally, Mr. Remmers.
Matt hit on it. The best thing about this release is the fact that you get 2 movies with Edward Everett Horton in them. And from what I can tell, he plays the same character in both of them.
Yeah, I think
which is just outrageous. And
If you're going to remake a movie and Edward Everett Horton was in the first one and he's still around, who else are you going to get to play that role?
Absolutely.
There's nobody else.
I mean, it's remarkable that it's only 8 years after the other one. But I mean, we see this sort of thing. I mean, it's a little closer, but then something like The Front Page being coupled.
Yeah.
I also wonder if this is a code issue. I mean, that's part of, like, you saw all these Silence being remade into talkies. Oftentimes they'd remake pre-code movies into code appropriate movies.
Things that can be distributed. Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had much play to license out Holiday prints to theaters at that point, the 1930 version. But yeah, this is very exciting for me. Any 1930s Cukor, I think, on the collection is very important. And the fact that this is only his second title in the entire collection is actually pretty astounding when you think of it. That Criterion Channel bundle was quite mouthwatering. And though this wasn't one of those titles, as far as I remember, it's really terrific that they're getting around to some of these. And hopefully we'll get Dinner at 8 at some point, which is... I think the best, one of the best films I've seen this year.
Yeah, I'd love The Women. I think it would be fine. Hopefully the channel curation will mean something, and that they're working on that, and bringing up Baby 2. I'm gonna wish for that just like everybody else. I think it's a fantastic movie. Have any of you guys seen the 1930 adaptation? This was a surprise.
No.
It
has 100 views on Letterboxd.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a kind of like the front page. You know, the remake is better than the original, but should be interesting. Well,
yeah, it'll be beautiful to see that view count spike a little bit when the release comes out in the months following, because truly a lot of these lesser known like 30s B titles they might put with a release will probably not get seen at all if it were not for this. So
absolutely,
we'll get some love for Edward H. Griffith, which I think is long overdue in the terms of the fact that I heard about who he was an hour ago.
Yeah, different Griffith was popular at the time. Who I think I'll prefer Edward H. blindly. There's some other a couple supplements. There's a conversation with Michael Schlesinger and Michael Srego. I can't say words tonight. There's a KUKOR AFI, I guess an audio interview, oral history. And that's really about it. There's an essay but two movies is huge. So this is, I think, a tentpole release for the month. Would you agree?
There's one more.
There's one that I'm excited about. We'll get to it. And it's not this one, but I have no problem with this one. So January 15th, we have the Sidney Lumet's The Fugitive Kind. Not the last time we'll mention Sidney Lumet. So this is an upgrade, and actually I haven't seen this one, so I don't know if I should be looking forward to it. I just didn't get around to it, and now I will. So back around the room, Brad.
I have not seen this one, sorry. I like Lumet, but this one I haven't seen.
All right. Josh?
You know, I am in the same boat, and we talked about Lumet when I was on Criterion Now, and like his films, and so this is one that I just haven't gotten around to. It's been sitting on my shelf, and now I'll wait even longer until I get the Blu-ray. So,
so rather than go around the room, who's seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, now,
I've seen it.
I can rely
on
you.
These are already
too.
In the collection, so yeah. Michael and I. excuse me. This is one of the last DVD-only titles that they released, so they're kind of playing catch-up here. I don't love this movie. It's very stage-bound. It's a Tennessee Williams play that he adapted himself, co-screenwrote. It's just... It feels a lot like a teleplay to me. I think the only elevation... here, and I don't think this will surprise anybody, is Marlon Brando's performance, which is exceptional even for him, I think. And so, you know, it's as a sort of acting masterclass, it's a delight to watch, but the movie itself I wasn't particularly taken with. It's been a while since I watched it, though, probably more than 5 years.
Yeah. And what about you, Michael?
Yeah, I have to go along with Matt here. It's not a great film, but it is very Tennessee Williams-y, if you can say that. But
yeah.
You've got also a good performance by Anna Magnani, I think, needs to be pointed out.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And Joanne Woodward, who, you know, plays her typical, you know, young kind of wild person, you know, Southern, very, very Southern, you know. So, yeah. It's all about Tennessee Williams, and as Matt was saying, it still feels stage bound because it's pretty much a one set piece.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Joanne Woodward as being the young. She's still at it. I don't think of her as young anymore, but yeah, I guess once upon a time. It looks like the extras are just a straight port from the DVD, which you'd expect, especially with, as Matt noted, it's one of the last DVDs. So there's an interview with Lumet. I'm sort of interested in it seems like this disc is more about Tennessee Williams than it is Sidney Lumet, so I think that says something. But there's three plays by Williams. One's an hour-long television, which it really is a teleplay, and I guess there's others. And then there's a program from 2010 discussing Williams' work in Hollywood and The Fugitive Kind. So do you guys remember from this DVD or the extras worthwhile? Or
I enjoyed the three plays. You know, it's like a one of those golden age of Hollywood type productions, you know.
Yeah, kind of like the golden age of TV.
Yes, right, yeah. So, yeah, and but they were very small. I mean, all three one-act plays only is an hour long, so they're about 20 minutes each.
Okay, well, yeah. Cool. And William, I think you're the only person we haven't heard from. Any thoughts?
So this is so funny to me because I think that as someone who is not Criterion viewing complete, at least as far as the DVD era is concerned, I keep coming across titles like once in a blue moon that I still have never noticed were in the collection. And
yeah.
And I've been following Criterion actively probably since Spine 400. And to have just missed some of these titles as they came out. And I think that era Matt's talking about, which is that last DVD only stretch. I think at that point I was just so blinded by all the Blu-ray titles that I wouldn't have noticed something like this ever coming out. Mm-hmm. So when I first saw the release, I'm like, oh, they're going to do two new Lumets. And it's just in this conversation that I'm seeing the old Spine number.
I forgot about it as well.
and I just struck me that I guess now it is that playing catch up, which is always great. And if they could find a way to tie it in with what they're up to now, but it doesn't seem like anything that was particularly called for. But I'm really excited about the one act plays, especially because that sort of thing really appeals to me. And I'm really enjoying the Criterion website's interface here, which I think I've not appreciated until today. Of a video and then a slideshow of stills from what really that seemed to be pretty accurate high resolution stills of what we're going to be able to see. And it looks really beautiful. Apparently this is the same restoration that was approved by Lumet, which definitely says something, as he would have had to do that from the grave if it was current.
Yeah, that would be logistics would be a little challenging with that.
there's a photo here. It's in the second in the slideshow of Brando holding a guitar, and just the detail on his hair on the guitar. I mean, that's a first day buy for me. Look at that detail.
Sounds good. So, all right. Wow, you're converted.
Yeah.
Before I move on to the next one, I do want to point out the holiday cover art. We kind of glossed over that, and I think that one's pretty. It kind of has that postcard look. Do you guys have any opinions on the cover art?
I'm not fond of it. No. Nope.
Okay. Fair.
It's based on the original poster.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been trying to find that poster, and I can't find it on Google Images yet. But I've only just started looking.
It kind of looks like Katharine Hepburn dies in a boat accident at the beginning, and she's just watching over them for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know who the artist is, I generally try not to criticize artwork, but. Yeah, I'm not sure what they're going for.
The topography on it reminds me just a little bit of the colors, at least, of the Palm Beach Story release. I'm getting just kind of that vibe from it, and so it's making me feel like it's going to be funnier than it might be, except for the ghostly Katharine Hepburn in the corner.
Yeah, I said postcard. I think more postage stamp, and it looks like they credited We talked about them not crediting artists. This time they said new cover based on a theatrical poster. So nobody's name is on this one. That says something. So trash it all you want.
Yeah, I still can't find that. I still can't find that poster. So if anybody finds it, please share it, I guess, in the Now group. Because just searching Holiday 1938 poster, I can't seem to find the poster that this resembles. So,
well, they did do a lot of digging on this movie. They mentioned it. I think Lee Klein mentioned it in an interview, right? Or was that Now Voyager? I'm sorry, that's Now Voyager.
It was Now Voyager, yeah. I think we saw the article recently that they work hard on all their titles. I think we can't really say they just kind of let it fly. But yeah, I would like to find that poster as well. Let's move on to the next one. Now, I think of the grouping, this was the one that was the most out of nowhere, but apparently kudos to Ryan Gallagher and Criterion Cast for predicting it in 2013. So it took a while. Or actually, not really predicting it. In fact, I just saw it pop up. I guess it was credited, or it was a Rialto acquisition. So they thought it might be coming to the Criterion, and I guess they were right. So Jean-Luc Godard is back in the collection, and Le Petit Soldat is one that it's been a blind spot. It's in his, I think, his peak years, and it hasn't been available on Blu-ray, and I kind of forgot about it. So just It hasn't been on Criterion too, so I'll just ask who here has seen it.
I have.
It's on the channel right now.
It was a Filmstruck title.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a new Filmstruck title, and I think it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I think it had the Criterion branding on it.
It does. Okay. Yeah. I consider it one of the permanent titles now. Yeah. One of the streaming only titles. Well, now X streaming only title.
So that's Josh's domain. Josh, did you get a chance to watch this on the channel?
I have not had a chance to watch this one yet. So
this was pretty hard to find before it came up on Filmstruck.
Yeah, it was one that I was planning to maybe do in an upcoming one where we look at kind of major directors and their works that haven't been released yet. So it's been released now. So it is now off the table.
It is off the table. Yeah. So it's it seems like it's more to, as he's getting into his political films. And it's also the screen debut of Anna Karina, so that's notable. So yeah,
doesn't it say that it's his second film that he?
Yeah, it was pretty early.
Yeah, it was delayed.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
By the French government.
After Breathless.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That makes so it's really not a 63. So it was after Breathless. Interesting. So okay, very.
I think he made it actually during the war with Algiers, and that maybe was why it was delayed until. Until after that situation.
Interesting. Yeah, Josh, and you had just mentioned Ponomarenko on your podcast, so that's quite an interesting pairing. That might be a interesting double feature. But Matt, what do you think?
I think this would make a good double feature with Muriel, actually, Renée movie.
The Renée.
I love that film.
I like that much better than this. This is kind of... I don't know. I hate to say minor Godard, but I don't think it stacks up to the best of this stretch for him. And it starts. I wasn't crazy about it. I'll just for me, Godard is hard to talk about when I don't like it. Like it's kind of like Godard is like pornography to me. Like I know when I see it. I didn't make the connection. Very strongly.
Yeah, nobody's ever hated a Godard film, have they? Michael, have you?
a few of them, yeah, but no, this one is okay. I can't say it's, you know, one of his best, but it is almost like pointing towards his more political films later in the 60s.
Yeah.
And it also has a feeling of like Alphaville, you know, and you've got this paranoia running through it, which is why whenever Matt brought up the Renée film, it's very much connects with his films, you know, in that regard.
Interesting. Yeah,
there's a bit of like naivete in the film, I feel like, in comparison to Godard's later work where he got bitter and jaded by the Vietnam War. Like it's got more of that playfulness and less of the angry Godard, and that kind of rings hollow for this subject matter. I don't know. Mm.
Yeah, especially during the torture scene.
Yeah.
It's hard not to be angry during torture scenes. Brad William, do you want to chime in?
It's the most playful movie, so I'm crazy.
I'm kind of hit and miss with Godard. Some of his stuff I love. Some of his stuff just makes me feel angry. How does this compare to something like Le Chinois? Because I was kind of mixed on that, and that's the closest thing of Godard's work that this reminds me of, just reading its description.
I think you're guaranteed
Le Chinois.
It's guaranteed that not everybody will like this movie. It just goes without saying. Remmers, you want to chime in, or should we just talk about the cover?
I can say something. First, I guess this does feel like, I mean, it wasn't a surprise to see it, I guess, in that it definitely feels like box ticking. I think a lot of us feel pretty confident if we were to look at, say, a Letterboxd director list and then just see the film popularity sort, to sort of see where the general cinephile consensus is on what are the most viewed and heralded films. And out of all of the top, 16 of Godard's films on Letterboxd by popularity, out of the ones that aren't from the 2010s, this is the only one they hadn't yet released besides La Chinoise, which is taken care of by another label. Mm. And And just the fact that it's like the next one on the list, basically. It clearly is established in that way. It's very strange that they're not doing King Lear, which I thought was the title that we were all sort of knowing was going to show
up. Yeah, that's been a while. I forgot about it.
And of course, their Godard focus has been the 1960s. So it's clear that just getting this one out of the way makes sense. I mean, I haven't gotten around to seeing it yet, and I think I was just sort of hanging around trying to watch more major Godard first and enjoying my love-hate relationship with his material, which is truly, it usually is either films that I completely despise or films that I really get a kick out of.
Yeah.
But he would probably love that.
I think that's so, but I think that to say it's near in terms of proximity of time frame to Breathless is not a good sign for me, because I think that could be one of his weakest films, which is so strange why it has such a high reputation, but I think that he really gets into his stride a little later in the 60s. But if anybody wants the very nice French lesson, because this title is being sold by its French title, neither T is said in this case. So you get T soldat. So you can enjoy that one little bit of French action, so that way you can feel impressive to your friends.
Appreciate it, Rimmers. Already.
I love you, Brad.
What do we think about the cover? I'll just chime in. I like the typography. I think that's interesting. What about the rest?
Right. Well,
this is coming to us from as Efron Miller, who's got a lot of titles that he we've seen. I mean, even as recently as the Dietrich and von Sternberg set, other things. His website shows a very impressive thing, and he does lots of art for Criterion Channel, and it looks like all the way back to Filmstruck, sort of collection boxes. So I think it's another one. I think this is a case, though, of a cover that will probably look better in person than it does in a small thumbnail. I think from afar, it kind of looks like there's something James Bond happening with the gun and the man in a suit.
And a circle, too.
Sure. To hold this up close, though, I think that it will probably read really well.
Yeah, any other thoughts before we move on to our boy Lumet? All right, we'll move on. All right, so January 28th are our last two titles, and we're back to Sidney Lumet, and I think you guys said, yeah, why not? We'll just put out another Lumet. So this is 1964. This is a Cold War thriller, and it's part of his little series there where he was going into the, I guess, the paranoia. It's not, this wasn't the paranoia trilogy, but there was certainly a theme in his work in the mid to late 60s. So, Failsafe, Josh and I talked about this as well, so I'll just start with you. Well, actually, I'll just first throw out, who hasn't seen it?
I have not.
I have not seen it.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So, all right, Matt. I'm glad you joined, Matt.
Yeah, I actually watched this while I was, and I'm going to self-plug here, working my way through Stanley Kubrick's filmography on the Complete podcast. I watched this as part of research for Dr. Strangelove, which I had only seen about 4,000 times and wrote my college essay on. First of all, it is the serious version of Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
It's interesting in a sense because the reason why the the missiles are going to be launched is kind of the opposite mission of why the missiles are launched in Dr. Strangelove. And I personally agree with Dr. Strangelove more than I agree with this movie. Interestingly, this was like the original Ants, Bug's Life or Armageddon, Deep Impact situation. And Kubrick actually made Columbia sue I think it was Paramount that was going to release this movie. At saying that they had ripped the author of this book had ripped off the idea from the author of the book that Dr. Strangelove was based on. And he only did that in order to delay the release of this film so that Dr. Strangelove would be the first of the nuclear movies to get into theaters.
An arms race, you could say.
It's a little silly that he did that just because they are totally different movies. I mean, this movie takes it so seriously. Walter Matthau is like extremely straight faced in it, and actually is really good in it, as is Henry Fonda. But it's just kind of like, it's so straight faced and so didactic in its message that I kind of got grinded down by the end of it. It is really beautifully shot, though. It's going to look great in Blu-ray. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those movies that you watch and you're like, okay, we get it.
Well, interesting.
Nuclear weapons are bad.
I think I also watched, it's been a long, long time, and I might have also watched it because of the Strange Love connection. And I just checked my letterbox. I don't have a rating for it, but I remember it pretty clearly. I think I definitely liked it more than you.
I'm being too hard on it. I did enjoy it. I mean, it's a really well-made movie. Lumet's a great craftsman, but yeah, I mean, just in the comparison, Dr. Strangelove, it fails.
Yeah, no, I think it's a tough shadow to tough act to follow, or lead in this case. So and actually the cover art I think speaks to that the tone that you mentioned, and you know, this is definitely not a comedy. It's a very dark movie. Brad, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just I have also seen it.
Oh, you have? Good.
A long time ago, when I was going through some like Lumet black and white kick, so like with 12 Angry Men and Long Day's Journey and Tonight. But I don't remember much of it, just because I think just for the reasons that Matt sort of illustrated, it's not really like memorable for anything other than its story in relationship to Dr. Strangelove, which is kind of unfortunate.
Hmm. Well, I think that this movie is so specifically about the Cold War and the sort of absurdity of the time, whereas Strangelove has a truly timeless quality to its commentary. And so I think that's part of it, where it's like you're watching this movie as a movie that was made in the mid-60s, as opposed mm-hmm. to it feeling fresh and still relevant to today.
So that's a great segue. So one of the segments that are the supplements that I'm interested in here is an interview with Jay Hoberman on 60s nuclear paranoia and Cold War films. And there are quite a few in the collection, actually, more than you might expect. And I really respect Jay Hoberman. I think he used to write for Village Voice, if I remember.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. There's also a audio commentary. It's from 2000, so I guess this must have had a DVD release, and it's probably pulled from that.
That's where I saw it. Yeah,
that makes sense. And then a documentary.
It's also, I don't know if anybody remembers, but George Clooney did a live television version of this. I'm gonna say like a decade and a half ago.
It was in 2000. It was with George Clooney, Richard Dreyfuss, right. And Noah Wiley. Yeah.
I'm going to guess that this is better than that, but I don't know. I haven't seen it. All right, so we're not too excited about this?
It is a good movie. It's just, yeah.
It's not Strangelove. Yeah, fair enough. All right.
When you reminded me on Criterion now that it was directed by Lumet, that makes me more interested in it, because, you know, even mediocre Lumet is still pretty good. Mm-hmm. So
it's pretty interestingly shot. Yeah. There's a whole sequence where Henry Fonda is basically just in a bunker and there's no decoration whatsoever. And Lumet keeps it moving and visually interesting consistently through it.
Sort of a stark, desolate scene in a way. Okay.
By the way, the screenwriter of this film and both screenwriters of Holiday were blacklisted. So that's
I saw that commentary. This is one of the more blacklisted titles in the collection, possibly. Interesting, and kind of makes sense. This subject they're writing about, a little controversial. So, well, okay, if that was a low note, I think we're probably going to end on a high note. At least for me,
hang on.
Remmers. Didn't mean
I have a thought. It's okay.
Sorry, Will.
I take my late in the alphabet backseat. Works against me. So Failsafe, I never seen this, but yeah, Lumet, I mean, the guy made Network. I mean, it's like the best movie ever made. And I wonder, I mean, it sounds to me like this, there's really not a laugh to be had in this one, but
no.
But just look at the cast though. I mean, the fact that Henry Fonda is the president, I mean, that's what the life I want to live. And and it's got Walter Matthau and Dan O'Hurley in it and Larry Hagman and Dom DeLuise, who isn't on Criterion's page, but he's in the movie. I'm really excited about this and to take a crack at it because the cast is so impressive. And I think anything like this that's so clearly of the time will present a very, very unique perspective.
Well, thank you.
Oh, and it's also spine 1111, which is,
yeah,
I don't know, if that doesn't feel like dialing some sort of code to signal that a nuclear apocalypse is happening, I don't know what it is.
It's the kind of password an idiot would have on his briefcase.
How long is that going to be on the site, though? When are they going to correct that, you know?
Well, let's get to spine 1112. At first I thought maybe they're playing with us, but until I saw this next one, I think it really is a typo. So, okay, this is the one I'm most excited about. We have Pedro Almodóvar's All About My Mother, and I think we've all figured this is coming. I expect there's going to be a lot of Almodóvar throughout the years, and I think it's interesting this is coming as was it Pain and Glory is about to come out in theaters. Actually, by the time this is out, it'll have already made its Oscar run. I think there's potential for some awards consideration. But this is, I wouldn't say early, this is mid-career Almodóvar. I love this movie. I think it's really special. And the colors, compared to Failsafe on the cover, very, very vibrant, which is on brand for Almodóvar. So, Brad, have you seen it?
Yes.
And do you agree, or are we going to fight?
Movie's okay for me. But
I'm lacing up my gloves right now.
Oh, yeah. we're moving right along, Brad.
I'm really, really sorry. I like Almodóvar okay. I know that people love him, and I totally respect that and get that. All of his films sort of feel to me like sort of a collection of, like, and then this happened, and then this happened. But I understand that's part of his charm. It just doesn't work for me as well as other people, but I like Talk to Her. Mm-hmm. That's still kind of the one I only really like, but the rest of them, they're just sort of okay for me.
Okay, so I think you just described narrative, actually. Things happen and then other things happen, so moving right along. Josh, what do you think?
I really like this one. I went and binged the Almodóvar films that were on the Criterion Channel a few months ago and filled in the holes for the films that I hadn't seen yet. I had just missed. And this was one that I just saw recently and I loved it. I thought this was fantastic. I think, you know, not all of Almodóvar's films completely work for me, but this one felt really strong. And so I really enjoyed this one quite a bit. And I'm really excited. This is the next one that's coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and so the M's, Matt and Michael. Matt, what do you think?
I haven't seen this movie since theaters. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I loved it. I'm curious to see how the portrayal of the transgender character holds up 20 years later.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I fully agree with Brad's characterization of Almodóvar, but I have yet to really love any of his films. I guess the closest for me would be Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which I found very charming but a little kind of vaudevillian. So I think it might just be a situation where his taste doesn't necessarily line up with mine. That said, I always love the covers, although I do wish that they had gone with the same artist who has done the other two Almodóvar.
Isn't that remarkable? Covers. Malika Fav did the previous ones. And it's amazing, though. I do think that it does seem to make me think that they did give, is this Petra Eriksson on the new cover? It seems like they may have given her the prompt to look at the previous covers and keep them
definitely
in
sure.
line.
Yeah, it's very
they complement each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Michael, I'm sure you've seen it, right?
Oh yes, and I adore this film beyond all reason. It's just one of those films that you watch and it just gets in your heart. And there's very few Almodovar films that are this emotional, especially I don't know. It's just something about it. Maybe it's for personal reasons, but beyond that, it's just a great story. You know, I love that he goes beyond his usual Madrid settings, and now he's in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And then the relationship between the mother and the son. But yeah, I love this film.
I'm with you. You guys were talking about Almodovar. I think this is definitely upper tier Almodovar, at least to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's. Yeah. He's always tremendous. In fact, I think he's actually at his best when he's less experimental. I think Talk to Her is interesting. I think there's some other films that are interesting. And I love his use of color. I mean, I think that shows through in most of his films. But yeah, this is more of a straight drama. And that's why I think it does pair closely with probably Pain and Glory, which seems to be more personal. Another thing about Almodovar is, and yeah, I don't know how the transgender will hold up, but he does really well with portraying female characters. And we can talk about the female gaze versus the male gaze, and sure, it's not the same thing. We had this conversation with about Bergman a couple of times, but I think, and maybe it's because he empowers his actresses. He seems to adore working with certain actresses, especially, of course, Penelope Cruz is in this. And I think that shines through in this movie. So, yeah. I'm not going to forget about Mr. Alphabetically Last, Will Remmers. So, do you want final word?
Okay. So, I love this movie. I saw it for the first time this past January, even. Mm. And it was my first Almodovar film. And I can just read you my Letterboxd review. It's only 3 sentences.
Sure.
What took me so long? Where's the 19-hour cut? The best film of 1999, which I probably agree with all of that still. I'm so excited to not see this on an old dumb DVD, but to see it now properly, now that I've now seen a couple of his films and I'm getting closer and closer to really understanding him. I think I am in the category of people who find that his aesthetic, so far as I've approached it, or what aspects of it I've seen, completely clicks with my sensibilities in a way. And I'm just always happy to have, you know, some 2-3-5-1 aspect ratio in the collection. That's always exciting. And finally, right after coming out of All About Eve, just pretty recently before this will have happened. It's a very syntactically confusing sentence. All About Eve will happen, and then this will happen later than that. But that makes sense because one references the other, and in the order that you would imagine, given their respective years. So it's just great that we have a lot of that all about energy filling the collection. And this is a major gap that I think is now being filled.
I agree. I think this is considered one of if not the, well, probably Talk to Her is his most celebrated work, but this is up there.
Did he win the Oscar for Talk to Her as well, or is this his only?
He did win something for, I'm pretty sure he won something for Talk to Her. I remember that being, he won, let's see.
Screenplay?
No, he was nominated. Yeah, he's nominated for Talk to Her.
Foreign Film?
Not for this. He was nominated
He won Best Foreign Language Film for this.
Okay. He was nominated for Best Director for Talk to Her. I guess he doesn't get credited for this, for that, but the film must have won. So what do we... and the supplements, I'll just throw out the one that I'm most excited about is the 2019 Q&A in Madrid. Not Barcelona with him. Agustin Almodovar, I'm thinking that maybe that's his son?
His brother,
okay.
Co-producers.
Yeah.
Okay. And then with Marisa Paraday. Let's see. Oh, yeah, it did win a foreign film. Good job, Matt. You get a gold star. So, all right, what do we think about the January lineup? We've used the November 2018 now, is that right, as the benchmark? So, Brad, what do you think?
What is this, like a rating out of 1 to 10?
Or... Sure, whatever you want.
Okay, is like 1 worst and 10 best?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to give this like a 3.
The month, a 3?
Yeah.
I think that's really fair because I don't think we've never set what the one is. Because if we know what 10 is, then like then, because I feel like we're usually always giving 6s to 10s. Not that I've done many of these, but I'm always listening to like, is there ever a 4? What is there ever a 5?
I think
I understand what Brad's saying. I mean, compared to all, if we were to rank the 12 months of the year, I think we'd very easily see that the grading curve, I mean, a 3 is probably going to be a passing grade.
I think one is the list of titles that were released on Disney Plus that month.
I think one is probably like the month that Jellyfish Eyes came out. It was December. I don't know.
It's not that bad.
It was Jellyfish Eyes and Burrows, I think.
Yeah, I remember that being a pretty weak month. Yeah, I can see that argument. Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, my tastes are different than, like, you know, you guys might have more enthusiasm for some of these titles than me. So, you know, it's gonna be different.
You don't have to justify it, buddy. So, Josh, what's your rating?
I will go lower than I normally go. I normally am comfortably in the 8 or 9 for most months, and this is probably about a 6 for me. I'm happy that all these films are coming out, but there aren't a lot of surprises, and it feels like a start to the year, and I'm excited to see what else they're going to release next year. But this feels, I think, Holiday is probably the one I'm the most excited for.
Okay, and Matt.
Well, I've already seen all of these. That's always a good thing for me. Because it doesn't add to the pile of things that I haven't seen yet. That said, a two.
Wow! Wow! Okay.
Break the system.
I think every single one of these movies is like the third best movie in a really good Criterion month.
All right. Now, definitely some less enthusiasm with this month. What about you, Michael?
Let's change this to a different way of recording. So instead of 1 to 10, let's make it a binary. Either you like it or you don't. So let's say of each of those 5 films, I'm going to give them either a 1 or a 2. 1 means I don't care to see it. 2 means I want to see it. Which means I'm looking at it now. There's 2, 4, 5. Okay, here we go. 0. Hey, let's say 0 means you don't care to see it. Okay, and so that means it'd be a 4 month. No, I can't do that. No, not with All About My Mother in there. No way. Well, let's make it a 6.
All right. Okay.
This is a 2000 election.
Everyone's just turned into a politician that somebody has shown
we're gonna have some saying chats.
Opposite thing.
All right, so I try to track. So 0 means you don't care, 1 means okay, and 2 means really, really excited. So I think that works. So all right. Well,
I was under the impression there would be no math.
All right, I'm gonna try to throw that math at Will. Let's see what you can come up with, Will.
A C.
Just overall impressions of the month, Will?
Well, I mean, All About My Mother. I mean, that is the thing I'm most excited about because it's the one I've seen and the one that I've recently realized is something that's been a missing part of my soul since I was a baby. Well, I guess I haven't been a baby since long before 1999, but from 1999, these last 20 years, like there's something that I needed and I finally found it. The Lumets are great. I never knew Fugitive Kind was there. I'll probably want all of these titles, but they're going to be competing with other titles in better months. I don't buy nearly everything. I probably only buy 5 or 6 titles each of the 4 annual sales. So I keep things pretty minimal. But I will guarantee to rent every single one of these, if not watch them when they stream, if not watch them when I eventually get them. I think the 2 buys are Holiday and All About My Mother, especially for Holiday's bonus feature.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. I use the Michael math, and I'm at a 7 because I'm gonna say Holiday and All About My Mother. I'm excited about the other 3. I'm interested in seeing. I'm not too probably least excited about the Godard and the Fugitive Kind, but so that's 7. So yeah, sorry, not a 3 or a 2. Buzzkills. All right. Parting thoughts. What are you gonna watch next? Brad.
I am going to watch Roger Corman's A Bucket of Blood.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one. Wait,
which I've never seen.
Josh.
I'm going to see the King Vidor War and Peace had disappeared from the channel and wasn't listed last month, but yeah. It's still showing up in my Jack Clayton bundle on my Apple TV app, and I was able to get it to start playing the other day. So now that I have some time this evening, I actually might try to watch that tonight.
Get it while you can. I'm curious how that is. So Matt and Michael, just go right after each other.
I'm going to watch Steven Universe.
Okay.
Everybody knows the best movie of 1999 is The Iron Giant. Go, Michael.
I tried watching that when I was a kid, and I gave up halfway through.
It's impossible to watch that as a kid.
Yeah.
I would have given it another shot. Like 10 when it came out, so I was like, "This is man, a That's robot a with film. Feelings? Get
yeah.
out of here!"
Yeah. I think it's time.
Best performance.
It's time for a mulligan on that one. Will. I'm with you, Matt. Michael.
Oh, I'm going to be trying to finish the Herschel Gordon Lewis bundle on the channel.
I'm so glad Michael is watching Herschel Gordon Lewis. I know, it feels so good.
Y'all know my feelings about horror films, but this is almost torture.
I signed up to watch everything.
I know, that's it. That's the thing. I can't go back now. But I've seen the first four, and I think I've got three more to go. I'm in the middle of the gruesome twosome. So yeah, I gotta finish it. Sorry.
Are they good?
The checks we write for us we don't want to cash. All right, well, William, what are you watching?
Oh, I have now four more Stanwyck titles, which is a pretty good amount for how much of the month is left.
Do you want to trade, William?
So I feel good. But I'm not in any rush, even if they eventually expire, which they will, because I own the Herschel Gordon Lewis set. So I can watch them. Michael, if you want to come over.
Fly me to New York. Yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do that.
You can eat some beef jerky and watch some. Yeah, I have the set too, and actually, we're going to be talking about Herschel Gordon Lewis a little bit on this weekend's podcast. But I'm watching Hackson. I'm in the middle of it. Usually, I don't like to stop movies in the midway, but had a lot of stuff to do. So, all right, gentlemen. Well, thanks for coming out on a Wednesday night when we didn't know if announcements were going to happen or not. So, this has been a good conversation.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron.